Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 14th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire Soccer Podcast Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein, and I will give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers at Major League Soccer Talk. .com, a member of the EPL Talk family of websites. Don't forget the EPL Talk, MLS Talk, and World Cup Buzz podcasts hosted by Richard Farley. Well, everyone, I think we all know after that heartbreaking loss against Ghana in extra time. But when you allow early goals in the match, it gets harder and harder to make these comebacks, and unfortunately, that 93rd-minute tally by Asamoah Gyan proved it. While it was possible to reach the quarterfinals, it was a bit slim for the thought of making it towards the semifinals. Still, it was a decent performance, and if Bob Bradley remains or U.S. soccer goes into a different direction, we will see the qualifying cycle. On a personal note, once again, I would like to thank all of you that have listened to 13 regular episodes, two U.S. Open Cup recap shows, six World Cup recap shows, including the USA games, and for the New York Red Bulls supporters, one midweek league show and three U.S. Open Cup qualifier shows. Right now, the totals have reached past 2,000. I say that I am grateful to all of you that are listening to my show, either through the live show on your iTunes files or the RSS feeds. One day, I hope to make this into something bigger and prove to the rest of the country who thinks this sport won't become popular will be dead wrong. Major League Soccer got back into action this past weekend and a couple of matches ended in scoreless draws. Like the Galaxy at Toronto FC, and Real Salt Lake hosting the San Jose Earthquakes. And let's not forget the 2-2 draw between the Dynamo and the Colorado Rapids. And of course, Houston giving the Rapids an own goal. The Crew and the Red Bulls returned to their winning ways with clean sheets. The Crew took out DC United, while the Red Bulls had a great second half, with Juan Pablo Angel putting in a brace. The Philadelphia Union finally opened up their new home in PPL Park, along the banks of the Delaware River, and next to the picturesque Commodore John Barry Bridge. A big second half for Philly as they earned their first win at their new grounds, but Pat Noonan of the Seattle scored the first goal. Before we give you the schedule of the next round of matches in MLS, this Tuesday and Wednesday is the third round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. You can follow the matches through a blog on www.thecup.us. Here are the matches for round three proper of the U.S. Open Cup. Tuesday, June 29th, Harrisburg City Islanders face the New York Red Bulls at Skyline Sports Complex in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 7 p.m. Eastern. DC United hosts Richmond Kickers at George Mason Stadium in Fairfax, Virginia. And, of course, that's on the campus of George Mason University, 7 p.m. Eastern. Chicago Fire hosts Charleston Battery at Toyota Park, Bridgeview, Illinois, 7:30 p.m. Central. Columbus Crew hosts Rochester Stadium, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Houston Dynamo hosts Miami FC at Robertson Stadium, 7:30 p.m. Central. The Los Angeles Galaxy hosts AC St. Louis at the Home Depot Center, 7:30 p.m. Pacific. And Chivas USA hosts the Austin Aztecs at Cal State Fullerton, 7:30 p.m. Pacific. On Wednesday, June 30th, the Northwest rivalry is renewed as the Portland Timbers host the Seattle Sounders at PGE Park, 7:30 p.m. Pacific. Follow a live blog on thecup.us. Once again, on the internet, that's www.thecup.us. And don't forget the Round 3 recap show of the U.S. Open Cup here on the Feuerstein's Fire Show on July 1st at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. The next set of matches in Major League Soccer will be on the 4th of July holiday weekend, and it keeps on getting exciting this new season. The ESPN2 Thursday night match of the week. Toronto FC hosts Houston Dynamo at BMO Field, 7 p.m. Eastern. On Friday, July 2nd, Real Salt Lake hosts New England Revolution at Rio Tinto Stadium, 10 p.m. Eastern locally, Comcast Sportsnet New England in the Boston area. July 3rd, the Fox Soccer Channel doubleheader matches of the week. At 8 p.m. Eastern, the Columbus Crew hosts the Chicago Fire at Crew Stadium, and at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, Chivas USA hosts the Philadelphia Union at the Home Depot Center. Also on Saturday, FC Dallas hosts the Kansas City Wizards at Pizza Hut Park, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Locally on Fox Sports Net Southwest Plus in Dallas and KCWE in the Kansas City area. The San Jose Earthquakes hosts United at Buckshaw Stadium. Locally on Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area in San Jose and Comcast Sportsnet Mid-Atlantic in the Maryland, D.C., and Northern Virginia area. On the 4th of July, hosts the New York Red Bulls in their annual holiday match at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, 9 p.m. Eastern. Locally on MSG Network in the tri-state area of New York City and KWGN Channel 2 in the Denver area. Finally, the Los Angeles Galaxy Seattle Sounders at the Home Depot Center with the return of Landon Donovan and Edson Buttle from World Cup duty. Fox Sports Net West in the Los Angeles area and Kong in Seattle. If you are looking for the latest gear on this summer's World Cup in South Africa, then the Premier Soccer Shop is the place for you. They have tons of USA jerseys, training shirts, jackets, and of course, the top football club jerseys from Europe, South America, and other national teams. Not only do they have balls and boots, but they will customize your USA jerseys of your favorite players with the official USA numbers and letters from you're from the New York City, Northern New Jersey area, head on down to Hoboken and get your gear at the Premier Soccer Shop, 157 First Street. Call the shop at 201-533-8900 or go online at www.com. They are on Twitter and Facebook as well. Well, folks, I have a good show for you today. We will have Jeff Reed on, who is a supporter of the Philadelphia Union, as they finally opened PPL Park. Our NASL segment, and of course, recapping the Red Bulls' victory over the Kansas City Wizards. But first, I would like to discuss with you the past World Cup matches, as well as the performance of the U.S. national team. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I guess we're going to have to restart again with the USA. I do have to say that just those poor starts really, really affected how our boys were trying to play. Those poor, poor starts forced them to make these comebacks become, I guess, regular things. Old hat, as they would say. And unfortunately, that also doomed them in the end. Because once they were able to equalize against Ghana in the second round match, there wasn't going to be another comeback in them to at least try and force penalties. Flat performances was definitely something that should never have happened. Ball watching against England that allowed Steven Gerrard to get that fourth-minute goal, giving too much respect, too much room, too much space to allow Slovenia to get that first goal and just not quickly getting back on a quick counter that made it 2-0 Slovenia at the half. Fortunate enough that Algeria did not convert on their fifth-minute tally as it struck the crossbar and out. But an unforced error by Ricardo Clark in the fifth minute against Ghana allowed Kevin Prince-Boateng to get the 1-0 lead. Was it a great World Cup for the United States? I will have to say no, it wasn't. I felt it was a decent performance. It really, really was. The idea, obviously, is to get out of the group stage of the World Cup, and then you see what's going to happen when you get to the knockout round. And they got to the knockout round. And you really felt that maybe they would reach the round of penalties, or you'd hope for that big strike in extra time. But unfortunately, they caught ball watching again. And Asamoah Gyan was able to split the defenders and put one home past Tim Howard. Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, that cannot happen in the next World Cup. That cannot happen if the for the next Confederations Cup when they play in the 2011 CONCACAF Gold Cup tournament. And you know what? Did I think Bob Bradley did a good job? I think he did do a good job. With tactics, formations, I really believe he did. My only concern, unfortunately, was the selection. I felt that Bob Bradley did not use his bench the proper way, and that, or at least his roster the proper way. He made the substitutions when he had to, and he did so very well. Unfortunately, for Edson Buttle to come off the bench twice and not start once, that for me was a problem. If Edson Buttle put on a fantastic performance against Australia, then why on earth, would he not use him in these games? Why? I mean, it's really mind-boggling that Bob Bradley not use a guy who was red hot from the start of MLS all the way to the World Cup. It's just beyond me how Bob Bradley could not use this man and just not use him at all. Using him. I mean, coming off the bench is one thing, and if you have plenty of minutes on there, but you know what? It's just, I felt it wasn't right. And that's not what should have happened. Edson Buttle should have either paired up with Jozy Altidore, or if Bob Bradley was going to still use the target man up front as a forward with a speedy player to stretch the defense, then that Buttle should have been there and Altidore should have taken a rest. Now, don't get me wrong. I like Jozy Altidore. He's an original member draft, the last draft pick of the Metro Stars becoming New York Red Bulls. I would always want him as a starter. But if they had to use him off the bench or give him a rest, then that was fine as well. That was fine as well. I don't have any complaints. I only want what's best for the U.S. national team in their drive to move forward and to try and get to the World Cup final in the best way. Unfortunately, those things did not happen. But here's the question. Is Bob Bradley still the man to stay another 4 years? Many of you are saying no. Many of you already want him gone. Many of you believe that he does not have the technical knowledge or the savvy to go out there and perform for the national team. You feel he should be not returned to the post. Well, either U.S. Soccer will tell him thank you, but no thank you, or Bob Bradley will tell U.S. Soccer, I'd rather go back and coach a club side. So either way, you'll probably win. And here's the big question for all of us that support the U.S. national team. Who is ready to come in and wants to be here? You can always say about bringing in someone like Rafael Benitez, not going to happen. He's at Inter Milan. Sir Alex Ferguson, he's going to stay at Manchester United for a long, long time till he either retires or croaks. I'm not trying to be mean about it, but let's face it. He's going to stay there till the day he leaves on his own or if he leaves the earth. Arsene Wenger, he will never leave Arsenal. Never, ever will he leave Arsenal unless he decides to go on his own or if the board will sack him and by someone else either in Europe or possibly a club side back in France, or he could be a French national team head coach in the future. I'm assuming he's been one in the past, but then again, I don't know the man that well, and I haven't seen his record of past clubs coached or national teams coached. Jose Mourinho, he's at Real Madrid after his leading Inter Milan to back-to-back Serie A champions, a treble this past season with the Coppa Italia, and of course, the UEFA Champions League championship, the first one for Inter Milan in such a long, long time. Who is out there from Europe to come for the USA? He's going to be the new head coach for the Turkish national team, so I don't see him coming either. While it's pretty easy and obvious to say that name me one guy who doesn't want to coach the national team, or name me a guy who thinks he can come here and coach the national team. It's not that simple. U.S. soccer, unfortunately, will not allow a head coach to run the whole show. And when I mean the whole show, that is the youth national teams, and that is also the national team included. He will only run the national team while everyone else will be a head coach for either the under-14s, the under-15s, the under-18s, the Olympics, the Olympic team. You know what? Who will be that person who wants to be the head coach of the U.S. national team, the senior side? Because we already saw what happened. And many people have been saying, bring back Jurgen Klinsmann. Jurgen Klinsmann is not coming back to re-interview for that position. He got jerked around by Sunil Gulati. He was told that he will not control everything that goes on with the national team of the United States, and therefore he is not going to make the return to national team football with the United States. He will just stay in California. He'll just be a supporter. He'll probably play for an amateur side, and that is it. If Jurgen Klinsmann does the turnaround out of the blue, then you know what? Then I don't have a problem with it. But I do have a problem if Sunil Gulati and the rest at Soccer House just doesn't want to pick the right person to be the head coach of our national team. Who do I have as a possible replacement for Bob Bradley if he is either leaving or will not return? Very simple. If you want to look inside Major League Soccer, and I've written this already on Major League Soccer Talk's website about who should be the next national team head coach, either fired, resigns, or walks away. Leo Beenhakker, a Dutchman who was national team coach for at least 2 years. He was also the head coach of Saudi Arabia for 2 years. He was the head coach of Trinidad and Tobago for 2 years, and the coach of Poland recently for the last 3 years. This man has been the head coach in many clubs in the Netherlands, in Mexico. So this man has a vast knowledge of football, not just in Europe, but in CONCACAF as well. Very technically sound, good tactician. I truly believe that he can be the guy if U.S. Soccer pursues him. If U.S. Soccer really wants to bring this man in for 4 years, they have to be serious about this. They have to go into this thing, meaning making it to the World Cup and going all the way. And who would be his assistant coach? Very simple, be Thomas Rongen. Thomas Rongen, also from the Netherlands, has spent most of his life here in the United States, not just as a head coach of the original Tampa Bay Mutiny, the New England Revolution, United, Chivas USA. If this man can be the man in the middle between Beenhakker, MLS, and American players playing abroad in Europe, Mexico and South America as well, who knows what could happen in Brazil in 2014. This man can bring in the proper people to be on the roster. And speaking about national team coaches that are probably the best in the world, or supposedly the best in the world, hey, England, next time when you think it's E-A-S-Y, just remember it's always going to be H-A-R-D. Because no matter how you got out of the group, you were pathetic. You were weak. You did not play well. And no matter what excuses you come up with, it really doesn't matter anymore, because guess what? You are not the power you think you are. Where is the next great keeper for England coming? Where are these so-called world-class players that play in your premiership? Apparently, all you can do is do well in Europe. Apparently, that's all you can do, club-wise. Apparently, the name England does not put the fear in us anymore. Now, does it? Who puts the fear in me when I see my USA national team play against Germany, Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay? Those countries, when it comes to the top footballing nations in the world, put the fear in me whenever my USA plays against them, either in a friendly or in any competitions, and that includes the Confederations Cup, and you can dismiss it all you want. The point is this. Even though we lost to Brazil in the Confederations Cup final, we had a 2-0 lead going into the half. You think you're all that. Yeah, you created the game. Yes, you fools. But how is it possible that you've only had one World Cup championship and everyone else has one or more? Why does Italy have 4? Why does Brazil have 5? Germany with 3, Argentina with 2, Uruguay with 2. I mean, the only people that can tie you for a World Cup championship is France. They've only won it on home soil, just like England has. But, you know, that's how it goes. That's how the football bounces and goes off the keeper's gloves and into the net. Where are these so-called world-class players? All they care about is their club football. They can care less about their national team. Oh, I could be wrong about that. But the way they performed, even you have to admit, it's been downright disgusting. I know what you're going to say. You, American, you have no right to talk about our national team like that. You, American, you only dream of being where we are. No, I only dream about winning the World Cup and hopefully win it more than once. We are a developing nation in football. We are a developing nation in players, stadiums, infrastructure. It will all come together. You can make all the jokes you want. You understand? You can make all the jokes you want. At least our football is improving. And when we come to England, our players come to England and play in your precious Premiership, there be barely an Englishman playing on these teams at all. At all. Next thing you know, they'll be looking for the national team players in the championship. They could go as low as Football Leagues 1 and 2. Guess America is on the rise. And European coaches, these fantasy European coaches, actually takes us seriously? You watch. In fact, I wouldn't mind it if Steve McClaren would be the head coach of the United States. Let him give us a shot. After all, he did lead a Dutch side to the first championship in FC 20. Anything else going on in the world of football? Technology, ladies and gentlemen. Here is what would happen. I would have, and I'm being dead honest on this, if there is a goal controversy of whether it crossed or not, have the fourth official have him put a monitor on his table and watch what happens on the replays. It doesn't have to be a replay booth. He can get the replays from the television network. And at the same time, he can contact the main official on the field with his microphone headset if it's a goal or not. It wouldn't take that long. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me is a man who's happy. Philadelphia area has a brand new home called PPL Park. His name is Jeff Reed. Jeff, how are you today?
I am very well, thank you, sir. How about yourself?
I'm doing very good. Even though our boys got knocked out early in the World Cup, I can definitely say that it's another happy day in the history of Major League Soccer, as well as bringing football back to the city of Philadelphia and its suburbs. How wonderful was it to be there to experience the very first match of PPL Park with Philadelphia Union?
Oh, it was fantastic. It was absolutely, it was brilliant. It was, of course, it was a very, very hot day. And, of course, unfortunately, we were sitting on the end where the sun was just beating down on us the whole time, like the whole game. But, I mean, as for the day itself, it was just brilliant. It was fantastic. The crowd was magnificent. The boys came back and played well the second half after, I guess, Novak gave them a good talking to at halftime. And, yeah, you know, no complaints at all from me. It was wonderful, and I can't wait till July 10th when the earthquakes come to town.
Well, obviously, being on the road for so long, and there was that two-week break in the World Cup, and you did have two home matches at your temporary home at the Lincoln Financial Field, the home of the Philadelphia Eagles. And finally, even though it would be nice to you can move the Eagles out, but obviously it wasn't going to happen. And just home, just when you see, I would have to say, the sea of humanity in dark blue and gold.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Dan? You were cutting out there.
No, that's all right. I'm just saying there was a sea of dark blue and gold at PPL Park. It was just absolutely fantastic to see.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was wonderful. I think part of that was because I think the club was giving out like free T-shirts. It was just one of those like usual like team T-shirts you get like hand out free at games like inaugural season 2010. And of course, the Sons of Ben was like, you know, sky blue, which is what their color is anyways. But yeah, it was absolutely wonderful, mate. Absolutely wonderful. You couldn't complain about one bit about the atmosphere. You know, of course, when a few decisions didn't go the Union's way, of course, the famous boo started coming out, with Philadelphia really famous for. it was absolutely terrific time, terrific atmosphere. And like I said, I can't wait till the next home game on July 10th.
Definitely. I understand the next couple of home matches will definitely be at home. We have about 13 remaining on the schedule. Probably around 12 then, I would have to assume, because you already played your third home game over at the opener. Talk about the match. Obviously, the first goal was tough to see. And then second half, you just came out roaring. There was a penalty given to Latou. And then, of course, Chris Seitz made a great save, even though it was a bad penalty. In my view, it doesn't matter if the penalty was taken well or poorly. As long as the keeper saves it, that's all that matters.
Absolutely. Absolutely, of course. I had a very good view of the penalty that Chris Seitz saved from Pat Noonan. Second half, I had a good view of that, and like you said, yeah, it was a very poorly taken penalty, but at the same time, it's a safe penalty, and that was a great boost of confidence, I think, for Chris Seitz, who's had a very shaky season, as we all know. He's had numerous errors, and really, I mean, I know he's been in the league for a couple of years, but this is really, you can say, kind of his rookie season as a starting goalkeeper. And you know, Novak's shown he's got faith in him, and he could have benched him and put in Brad Knighton, the goalkeeper we got from the Revolution. in the expansion draft, but he certainly stuck with him. And as for the penalty at the other end that Moreno won, I mean, I couldn't quite get a good view where that was, or where I was sitting, because you know we were down the other end of the stadium. But as watching on the replay on like the big screen, I thought I think it was Tyrone Marshall that gave away the penalty there. I think he was a little unlucky because he didn't see Moreno come in, but it was definitely a penalty without question. And you know, and Latour again steps up and scores another goal for us. And I still find it astounding how the Sounders just gave away just Latour in the expansion draft. You know, they didn't get anything for him, and yet they've been struggling to score goals this season. And yet here he is, you know, doing well for us, and he's our top goal scorer. So I still can't get my head around that, why Ziggy Schmidt decided to let him go like that. But yeah, there you go. You know, their loss, our gain.
Well, I'll tell you this much, Jeff. You know, just seeing when the ESPN opened up the broadcast, wonderful view of the Commodore John Barry Bridge. And, of course, panning down, you're seeing the beautiful Delaware River. Wonderful that, obviously, I would have to say most Philadelphians would say we wish it was in the center city or at least in the sportsplex of the Citizens Bank Park, ballpark, Lincoln Financial Field, and, of course, the Wachovia Center. But I think putting it here along the banks of the Delaware River and, of course, in Chester to help a neighbor of Philadelphia, I think it's just a fabulous thing to say.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, first of all, it's in the I prefer this location compared to being at the sports complex where the Link, the bank, Citizens Bank, is codenamed the bank for it, and the Wachovia Center. I prefer where it is right now instead of being there because, well, A, it's only like 15 minutes from my house, so it's much less of a drive. but most importantly, though, I think that this is a good location because, well, I mean, obviously you're saying, you know, for Chester, and it's supposed to be the golden jewel in the redevelopment package, you know, for the city itself. But also because, yeah, I mean, in some ways I can understand why some fans might think, yeah, I would prefer to be with the in where the rest of the sports complex was, like maybe where the site where the old Spectrum was, where that got knocked down. But at the same time, I like how it's in a different location because it kind of keeps the club keeps its own identity, you know, separate from the other like mainstream sports. But you know, but it's not like too far away where it's like FC Dallas, for example. Where I mean, I'm not sure how far Pizza Park is outside of you know Dallas, but I've heard it's up to like 45 minutes. So. In a way, it's just far enough where you can, you know, you don't have to associate yourselves too much, you know, with the other teams. But at the same time, it's you know, it's close enough where it's not far of a drive or a train ride or however you want to get there. So you know, it will remain to be seen whether you know it'll be 18,755 at every single game. But certainly, you know, there's no real excuse why there can't be close to sellout every game. You know, certainly the fact that there's 12,000 season tickets already been capped off, and then I think partial season ticket plans are already, like, you know, going very, very fast. And, you know, location-wise, yeah, like you're saying, you can't complain. You can't complain at all. It's just tremendous.
Now, real quick, I was wondering, was there supposed to be an upper deck to PPL Park, or did they have to scale it back because of financial problems?
That's a great question. I think, to be honest, I think the reason why it was the official capacity is 18,500 instead of like maybe 20,000, I think, was because of the money. Because I think, I can't remember the exact figures, but I think $47 million of the 100, however much it was, I can't remember the total cost of the stadium, but 47 actually came from the state itself. I just don't think the money was there at the time to make it bigger. Now, the thing is, I've heard they can expand it, but when I was looking there, the only place I can see where they could possibly expand would be the Sons of Ben section and make that, well, I was going to say the cop end, but that's just me being a Liverpool fan. But the, I think they call it the river end. I think they could probably extend on that, because anywhere else in the rest of the stadium, like, unless if they somehow could move the roof further upwards, I don't think, I can't see them possibly extending it. Because you got the club seats and the boxes, the sky boxes and all that on one end. So like I said, unless you can somehow raise the roof, and I'm no expert, you know, in building or anything like that, I think the best bet to expand it would be the Sons of Ben. And that would make sense because, you know, if they keep growing, so at the moment they're around 6,500, they could be close to maybe 7,000 members by now. So if they keep growing, then they're going to need a bigger supporter section. And, you know, I don't really want to, you know, I wouldn't want to sit any, like, families with the, you know, the SOBs, you know, no offense to the SOBs or anything. But, you know, it's not something, I mean, some of the chants they were saying is they're not going to repeat, but they can't, you can't really, you don't really want like 10-year-olds to hear that. So, but going back to your question, yeah, I think the only way they could extend it would be probably the Sons of Ben section, the river end, I believe. But then it might kill, like, the view of, like, the Delaware River as well. So, I mean, it's up in the air. But like I said, I'm not a developer. I'm not an expert in that. But I was actually thinking that yesterday as I was looking around the stadium.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, obviously, Red Bull Arena is another jewel of Major League Soccer. It's, like I will say, it is probably one of the better stadiums right now because it looks and it feels European. But in my view, it really doesn't matter how these stadiums are built in Major League Soccer in our country, as long as they're built and all our clubs can stay financially sound and it's always a positive to see this. And obviously 18,500 is not bad. Hopefully there will be an opportunity for an expansion of seats. And I will agree with you. I think you could probably see that. You could probably see that on the other side of the stadium where the bridge side is. But where do the players enter? Do they enter at center circle, or is it behind, or is it where the Sons of Ben's support at?
it's actually where the Sons of Ben are. you should have heard the boos when the Sounders actually came out and they had to go back in that way. I think it was designed on purpose like that. But yeah, that was a really smart idea because there's going to be some, to put it kindly, heckling amongst, I guess, the opposition. but yeah, the entrance for like referees as well, and the referees are getting booed, of course, as well as they went in half time. And not at the end because it was a win, but half time, you know, they were getting boos as well. But yeah, the entrance is actually through the Sons of Ben section underneath. So it's different, but I tell you what, like I said, I think they designed it on purpose that way. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's just your typical Philadelphia sports crowd. You better have a shield on you when you leave the playing surface.
Yeah, exactly. Just hope you're not Santa Claus.
Well, I'll tell you that Philadelphia is a part of the MLS. I'm very happy that we got a fourth tenant now. This I-95 rivalry is going to be. And obviously, it's not going to happen that fast. But obviously, probably another year or two, you need a major sending off to really start the blood boiling, if you know what I mean.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, like you said, it's going to take maybe 2 years or so to actually develop a real hardcore rivalry. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not a Galaxy or Chivas fan, but I'm trying to think how long it like really took that rivalry to blow over. Actually, it might have been when I think it was maybe when Jesse Marsh kind of went in like studs up on Mr. Beckham that one time, where that might have pushed it to a new level. And you know, maybe we're going to see something like that between your lads and mine, or maybe you know DC or even New England's as well. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's going to take time to get like that. There's no doubt. Plus the fact that you know there was no USL team here beforehand, well, you compare, you swing down the other end of the country, the Northwest, where, you know, there's three USL clubs, Vancouver, Seattle, and Portland, and now they're all going to be in MLS. So therefore, you know, the rivalry is just, you know, there to begin with. So, but you know, this one will take time for sure. But I certainly think that, you know, you're right. It's going to take a couple of years. You know, once I think, you know, we start becoming a good team, because it's too much to really expect out of us this year. But you know, you got a traditional power like DC, which, you know, you've been fighting against them for, you know, 15 years now. Now, you guys are really becoming good now. New England's been consistently good. So it's only going to get better, and it's just, it's just going to be fantastic these next few years.
Well, Jeff, thanks for spending the time with us here on the show. Once again, congratulations on your brand new stadium. And just out of curiosity, what does PPL stand for in Philadelphia?
No, I did think it was Pennsylvania PPL, Pennsylvania Power and Lighting, possibly. But I know when I did one of my pieces on WVHooligan.com, I got ripped by one of the fans saying that that's not what it stood for. I think it's something like Pennsylvania Power and Lighting. I could be wrong there, so don't quote me on that.
Okay.
It's a local company that's based in the area.
Well, that's always great. It's always nice to see a local business getting involved with the game here in the country, and, of course, to be the naming rights of the brand-new stadium. Jeff, thanks again for joining me on the show, and good luck with the Union and your brand-new home.
Thanks a lot, mate. You're very welcome, and I'll be speaking to you soon.
Yes, you will. Take care, my friend.
Cheers, Blake.
Cheers. That was Jeff Reed, Philadelphia Union supporter, for his first match at PPL Park. And I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, it's always nice to see a local business getting involved with sport, with the sport here in the country. It's always nice. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the North American Soccer League segment, the NASL segment. Now let's go right away to the standings of the Division II U.S. Soccer League. As we get the standings up here on the screen, Vancouver Whitecaps at the moment leading the NASL conference with 21 points with 13 matches played. In second place, Montreal Impact with 17 points. Carolina Railhawks in third with 15. Fourth place, Miami FC with 13. Fifth place, Crystal Palace Baltimore with 12. And AC St. Louis in last with 8. 2 wins, 2 draws, 7 losses with a goal differential of minus 10. Very, very bad. But once again, they are an expansion side. The USL Conference in first place, the Austin Aztecs with 30 points. Second place, Rochester Rhinos with 22. Third place, NSC Minnesota Stars with 20. Portland Timbers in fourth place with 19. FC Tampa Bay in fifth place with 18. Last but not least, the Puerto Rico Islanders with 13 points with basically not a bad record of 4 wins, a draw, and 6 losses, but still, at least their differential's not as bad as AC St. Louis. And the schedules at the moment, we are unable to give you the schedule for the U.S. Soccer Second Division. Try and get it up here as quickly as possible if we can. Let's see if we can head back to the main page here. This past weekend, USF Second Division in Minnesota with a 3-1 victory over Crystal Palace Baltimore. Rochester 3-0 victory over Puerto Rico. Montreal, Carolina with a 2-2 draw. 2-1 Austin over Miami. Vancouver, 0-0 draw with AC St. Louis. Sunday the 27th, Tampa Bay 0, Portland 1. And, of course, that was the U.S. Soccer Second Division schedule for the clubs. Ladies and gentlemen, some of you may know and some of you may not know this, but apparently if you do not follow the, or at least the U.S. Soccer Second Division League, the brother of Nicholas Anelka, Claude Anelka, was fired by AC St. Louis after their second round victory in the U.S. Open Cup over NSC Minnesota Stars. And if you were listening to the second round recap show, Brian Korstad of Inside Minnesota also broke the story that it happened. But I also have the story from the St. Louis Globe Democrat, written by Mr. Dave Lang, that was written on 5th. Apparently, he has been replaced with a longtime local club soccer coach, Dale Shilley. And Mr. Shilley has directed the Metro United Soccer Club in Edwardsville and its successor, St. Louis, Scott Gallagher, Illinois, for the last 15 years. And, of course, strangely enough, Mr. Anelka was fired in the middle of a three-match winning streak. And, of course, that winning streak is rounds 1 and 2 of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, you can have a terrible league season, but when you get to an FA Cup tournament and you're what's possibly gloom and doom in your league season can definitely be turned around. Obviously, a lot of things happened with AC St. Louis this year, as we all know. With AC St. Louis, there are financial problems. Mr. Cooper having to relinquish the commissioner duties of the NASL and other matters that have finally turned up were actually these brothers from England, the Vieds, apparently not able to put in money into the club. Jeff Cooper was able to find the funds to keep AC St. Louis stable for the rest of the year. And hopefully, Mr. Cooper can either keep on going with AC St. Louis or investors that will be serious and help keep this club going. The reason for Mr. Claude Anelka's departure, or his sacking, if you want to use the term, understand that some of the players were not happy with the training sessions. That a change was needed. And once again, the departure of St. Louis Athletica in the WPS in the middle of the season was also, but unfortunately, these things happen, and I really wish they wouldn't. I really, really wish these things would not have happened, but unfortunately, it is life. And these are the things that happen in life when it comes to financial problems. But we're not going to mix football with politics here. We are going to continue on with the show to talk about football. And the North American Soccer League trying to have a successful first year. And so far, I think they've done so. Obviously, they participated, the clubs that were formerly of the USL First Division, and taking a part in the U.S. Open Cup. It is fun to see. It is wonderful to see. And we should be supporting this tournament to the hilt. You watch the FA Cup in England. You watch the Coppa Italia in Italy. Copa del Rey in Spain, the German Cup in, of course, Germany, Coupe de France in France, a Scottish FA Cup. It just doesn't matter what type of cup tournament it is. We have the U.S. Open Cup. We support the Open Cup like we support the Division II Championship of U.S. Soccer, USL Second Division Championship, Major League Soccer playoffs, the MLS Cup playoffs, and everything. And that is absolutely fantastic and absolutely a fun thing to see. Hopefully, we'll find out what the heck is going on. And hopefully, better things will be coming. Other news going on in the NASL, all USF D2 matches will be available online, TV, and website news. This is courtesy of USLFans.com for the fans, by the fans. Railhawks will add an international player in Ettiny Barbara, Malta. And AC St. Louis signs Luke Kremlmeyer. That is their latest news so far with the USL, NASL, U.S. Soccer, Second Division League. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night, round 3 of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Once again, 5 USF Division II sides are still alive. AC St. Louis, Austin Aztecs, Miami FC, Portland Timbers, Rochester Rhinos. AC St. Louis, at the moment, will not have to face Landon Donovan or Edson Buttle in this match. So it could be a break. A break. Because the Los Angeles Galaxy have proven, with or without their superstars, they can still do some damage. And we'll see what happens in round 3 of the U.S. Open Cup. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready for the New York Red Bull Hour. Welcome to the Red Bulls Hour. The boys ended their 2-week break after a friendly with Brazilian side Cruzeiro, traveled to Community America Ballpark and watched them play a smart match and scored all their goals in the second half. Unfortunately for Wizards defender Aaron Holmbein, he got abused 3 times by both Salou Ibrahim and Juan Pablo Angel as he allowed all 3 goals to get by him. The first of 3 was in the 55th minute as Bunakon Duel booted the ball towards the Wizards' end and Holbein tried to head it towards his keeper, Jimmy Neal. Unfortunately, Holbein missed and Salou Ibrahim put a power header into the ball, third of the season. The Ghanaian forward was very happy to see his country defeat the USA and advances into the quarterfinals of the World Cup. Then it became the Juan Pablo Angel show. Another booted ball down the field by Kondul, and it was aimed at Angel. On the near side of the field, he was battling with Holbein, and when he allowed the ball to bounce, it was a one-time rip in the 82nd minute that went towards the net, and Jimmy Nelson couldn't handle it. The ball went into the net, and for Angel, it was his 7th of the season. When the 90th minute struck on the match clock, Angel worked again. Chris Albright booted the ball down the field and battling Angel. Either both men slipped, or one of them was grabbing the shirt. Either way, Angel got up first and got the ball back. He forced Nielsen off his line and then did it a little dance along the end line to avoid Nielsen. Then he slotted home his second of the match, eighth of the season. New York would win the match 3-0 and keeps pace with the Crew for the top of the East. It was a very hot and humid night in the Kansas City area. The game plan worked well, and the team was able to get the 3 points and have now surpassed the points total from last year. Surpassed the wins totals as well, and now they are on a mission to play their first U.S. Open Cup proper match on the road at Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. They will face the Harrisburg City Islanders tomorrow night, Tuesday. Hans Bakke has done a brilliant job so far, and let's all hope he continues to work his magic in round 3, proper, of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. If you are a big supporter of the New York Red Bulls, and you want to get the latest gear of your favorite club in the New York City area, hop on the PATH train or drive down to Hoboken and walk over to the Premier Soccer Shop located at 157 First Street. Get your brand new home white Red Bull New York shirt. Want to get it customized with your favorite players like Juan Pablo Angel, Dane Richards, Mike Petke, and newcomers like Jolyn Pair, rookie Tim Ream, Irving Garcia, Connor Chin, Thierry Henry. Thierry Henry. Is he coming? I think he is. That's the worst kept secret ever. Of course he's coming. They have the official numbers and letters from Major League Soccer to put on the backs of the jerseys. Call the shop at 201-533-8900 or go online at www.premsoccershop.com. They're on Twitter and Facebook as well. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is the worst kept secret in the footballing world. Sadly, crashing out of the World Cup was France. Combination of both. Playing terribly for Dominique. And also, I think, being embarrassed. Being embarrassed to possibly qualifying for the World Cup, but you never know. Red Bulls, and of course, talking about the talk of Thierry Henry coming over, we have here in transfers on ESPN SoccerNet, Barca chief Oliver confirms Henry exit. And I shall read you the story right now. This is, of course, today, June 28th. Barcelona Director General Joan Oliver has confirmed that Thierry Henry will be allowed to leave the club. Henry has struggled to impress at the Nou Camp since moving from Arsenal 2007 and found himself reduced to a bit part role under Pep Guardiola last season, with Pedro and Bojan Krcic regularly preferred. In other words, because of Thierry Henry's age, supposedly, Guardiola didn't want to use him that much anymore, and he wanted to use the younger players instead of Henry. Speculation was rife towards the end of last season that Henry was considered us, with New York Red Bulls widely reported to be favorites to sign him. Guardiola does not see Henry in his plans for next season, and Barcelona have already signed prolific Spain striker David Villa, a move that appeared to all but seal Henry's exit. That exit has now been confirmed by Oliver, who revealed that Henry will be allowed to leave the club despite his contract not being up until June 2011. It was a special position with the player, and we have accepted, Oliver said. For Barca, it is not a bad agreement because we avoid paying him next year, obviously. Despite enduring a torrid World Cup campaign with France, not starting a single game, Henry will still command his fair share of suitors through a move to the United States still appears the most likely. Meanwhile, Barcelona's sporting director, Tiji Bergeristian, and of course I probably screwed his name up, has confirmed he will be leaving the club following the election of new president Sandro Rosell. We don't care about that, obviously. The idea here is the Henry is going to move on, and it looks like he will be joining the New York Red Bulls. Major League Soccer transfer summer window will open July 15th. That'll be the first official day he is allowed to play for the Red Bulls. And, of course, that match will be on the road on July 17th on a Saturday against the Columbus Crew. So it looks like Juan Pablo Angel will have his dream strike partner coming in very soon in a couple of weeks. Now, other news, there was my friend Christian Dyer was writing a report about possibility of a special player coming to the Red Bulls. Hans Backe said that he was looking to bringing in a number 10 European player to fit in, but unfortunately it looks like those plans have fallen through. Who that player is, we do not know. It was kept a secret. We do not know of what's going to happen, but obviously he's probably been big. Right now it looks like it's going to be Tony Chung. That could be the... Or, from Christian Dyer, it sounds like Jeremy Hall is going to get a chance to play central mid. And he's not a bad candidate either, my friends. Last year, I asked Jeremy Hall during the last year of the season, or around the last couple of matches before the season ended, could he play centrally if he was asked? And he said, yeah, if he was asked, he would do it. So in tomorrow night's Open Cup match against the Harrisburg City Islanders, it looks like we're going to see that experiment, and we'll see how he performs. Because Jeremy Hall is a good talent. He's a strong talent. He comes from the University of Maryland. Obviously, the ACC has strong, talented players, just like the Pac-10 with UCLA and other colleges around the country. But still, I would like to see Jeremy Hall get a shot and possibly be the man to feed both Juan Pablo Angel and, of course, Thierry Henry once that gets signed. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to read you some quotes. I don't have any quotes with me at the moment, courtesy of audio. The match is on the road. I was not able to go on the road to Kansas City. Quotes. We're going to read to you from the Red Bulls reader's site. Of course, that's the official blog of the New York Red Bulls. Hans Backe's quotes of the match. Kansas City, once again, it was a fabulous match for the club. And as I get him up here he is. The quotes from Hans Backe. First, on the first game after 2 week break, Hans Backe says, "I'm very happy with our performance. I would say that our second half was our best half of the year. We created decent chances over all 90 minutes, but of course, KC had some good chances too. We were very close to killing off the game rather early in the second half when we had two 100% scoring chances. Also, a key is that we looked strong in the second half. Even with the heat, we became better and better all the time. So that was the best sign." Yes, it was difficult, of course, but I thought we played rather smart. We just tried to stay patient and wait for breaks and things like that. We didn't chase the ball too much and just tried to play solid and compact. He enjoyed the second one. Both strikes scored. He's a handful. The back forward. So those are the quotes from head coach Hans Backe. And let's be honest, he has done a fantastic job so far in 13 matches in his MLS coaching debut. And let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, if you support the Red Bulls, the man has really done a fantastic job with what has been going on. And with Juan Pablo Angel's two-goal performance, he was named the MLS Player of the Week. So the next match for the New York Red Bulls, league match, of course, the 4th of July, 9 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Mountain. The New York Red Bulls will be traveling to the Harrisburg City Islanders at Skyline Sports Complex in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And yours truly will be traveling to Harrisburg to watch this match from the press box. It's going to be a fun time for me. I'll be traveling with Amtrak from Newark to Harrisburg. I'll be staying at the Crown Plaza of Harrisburg, which is 4 blocks away from the train station. And from the hotel, I should say, it is 2 blocks away from the stadium itself. It's going to be fantastic. This will be my first match since the inaugural first season in 1996 when the Metro Stars played the Tampa Bay Mutiny at Tampa Stadium. I was there in 96, I was there in 97, and I was there in 98 to see the Metro play Tampa Bay. Unfortunately, they were all losses in Tampa, but you know what? It didn't matter to me. I saw my team play. I saw them do well. I did see them score a goal or two, but you know what? It was a great time. And that was in the summertime. I have, like I said, I have friends in Florida. I have friends in Orlando. Driving from Orlando to Tampa Bay was not a big deal with a rental car or when I was working down in Disney World. The Metros take on the former. I didn't play at Raymond James, but that's okay. But still, it was a lot of fun. If you're expecting me to tweet during the match, forget about it. There will be no tweeting going on because found out that there is no Wi-Fi or internet access at the stadium. So, but I will be bringing a digital video camera to film some of the action going on. And, of course, I will try and get them on Major League Soccer Talk. I can't wait to see what's going on. Now, I will say this, ladies and gentlemen. Seeing a U.S. Open Cup match, it's a fun thing to go to. Now, obviously, the last couple of Open Cup matches I've seen involving the Red Bulls / Metro Stars was either in Long Island at Complex, which is near the Nassau Coliseum in Long Island in Uniondale, or Yerkak Field in Rutgers University. And, of course, that was a quarterfinal matchup against New England Revolution back in 2003. The other matches that I saw back in 2000, Metro defeated Tampa Bay 3-0 on Long Island, and unfortunately Metro lost to the Miami Fusion 3-2 in September, and then when they came back to Mitchell Field, it was in the quarterfinals against the Crew. They lost 2-1 to the Crew in the quarterfinals. Now, this will be the first time that I am going to see the Metros or the Red Bulls playing an opponent that is not affiliated with Major League Soccer in the lower levels of U.S. soccer. So this is going to be fun. This will be a good. Catch the train to Newark, Penn Station, to take the Amtrak all the way down to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Check into my hotel and then walk on over to the soccer stadium, which is not that far from locations. If you want to check your Yahoo Maps or your Google Maps, or if you have the Microsoft Streets and Trips program, type in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and you'll see where the Amtrak station is, the train station is. You'll see the Crown Plaza Hotel, not far, four blocks away on 2nd Street, and then the Skyline Sports Complex, two blocks away from the hotel. It's going to be fun. And I can't wait to go. Am I packed up already? You better believe it, I am. I'm all, but I can't wait to go. It's going to be a lot of fun. And try and get someone from Harrisburg, maybe someone from the local media. Get someone from the local media to probably come on the show for the round three recap show. So we'll find out what's going to happen and take a look and see what's going on. So basically, it's going to be a lot of fun. Obviously, it's only for one night and got a pretty good price for the hotel. If you're going to do something like this again, and if it's close to a if the stadium is close to an Amtrak station, obviously Amtrak is not a bad ride. Obviously, you want to go with a couple of people. You can take a van or rent a van or just, you know, make a carpool or whatever. But if you feel like doing the train, and if you're wondering how much Amtrak one way from Penn Station, Newark, and or Penn Station in New York City underneath Madison Square Garden, $47 one way on the Pennsylvania line or the Keystone line, depending on which train and what time you're going to take it. And that's a one-way trip. And, of course, if you have the entertainment book, which is, of course, the discounts and the deals for if you want to stay in one of the hotels at the Crown Plaza, the entertainment book, good price for one night, $97. So that's pretty good, too. And like I said before, you don't have to rent a car. You can just walk over there. So basically, it's just a six-block radius going from the Amtrak station to the hotel and the Skyline Sports Complex in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So this will be my first time going to Harrisburg. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I can't wait. And ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, please don't forget, this coming Thursday, round three of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. We're going to have Mr. Chris Reardon supporting D.C. United. And, of course, we're going to have Stephen D. Lenhart, supporter of the Portland Timbers. He'll be coming on the show as well. And we're going to try and get as many people on for the show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a live show. If you're listening to the show live right now, if you'd like to give a call and you'd like to ask a question, 646-929-1823. Now, getting back to the Red Bulls, they're going to be taking on the Colorado Rapids on the 4th of July. And that will be the holiday event. Obviously, 9 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. Excuse me, 9 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Mountain. And as we take a look at the schedule for the Red Bulls, here is what is upcoming after the 4th of July. They'll finally be home Saturday, July 10th against DC United, and then Saturday, July 17th, they will travel to Columbus and take on the Crew. That's also at 7:30. And then they'll come home for the New York Football Challenge, and that will consist of teams like Tottenham Hotspur and Manchester City from the English Premiership, and of course, from the Portuguese First Division, Sporting Lisbon. And if you're curious to know, tickets are on sale, obviously, at Red Bull Arena, Ticketmaster outlets. Thursday, July 22nd, will be versus Tottenham, and that'll be at 8 o'clock start. Friday, July 23rd, Manchester City taking on Sporting Lisbon. That's also an 8 o'clock start. And then on Sunday, July 25th, will be the doubleheader. Tottenham Hotspurs will take on Sporting Lisbon at 1 o'clock. And then the Red Bulls will take on Manchester City at 3:30 p.m. And of course, this is one ticket for both matches. So you better get over there for those games if you want to see it. I believe Fox Soccer Channel will be showing the matches. If you can't make it to Red Bull Arena, it should be filled. You will definitely see players from both Tottenham and from Tottenham Hotspur, Sporting Lisbon, Manchester City that played in the World Cup, like Carlos Tevez of Argentina. And there was also, of course, Peter Crouch of England as well. So, on July 31st, which is a Saturday, Red Bull will travel down to Houston, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, at the Houston Dynamo and MSG. Then on Sunday night, August 8th, at Chicago Fire, 9 o'clock Eastern, that'll be ESPN2 on Sunday night. And then another two quick matches at home. Toronto FC comes over Wednesday night, August 11th on MSG. The annual meeting with the Los Angeles Galaxy on August 14th, Saturday night, 6 p.m. on Fox Soccer Channel, I should say. And, of course, Landon Donovan will be there. David Beckham will probably be on the bench. So that should be fun. August 21st. Afternoon tilt at Toronto FC, 1 p.m., and then they come home again August 28th, Saturday, September 4th, at Real Salt Lake, and that's also 9 p.m. Eastern, start MSG. And, of course, Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock, Saturday, September 11th, Red Bulls hosting Colorado Rapids. And, of course, that's on 9/11. That'll be on MSG as well as Telefutura. So that will be the matches at the moment for the New York Red Bulls. And here is a situation, if you're curious about the U.S. Open Cup, ladies and gentlemen. Quarterfinal pairings have already been announced. The possible matchups going on. If the New York Red Bulls defeat Harrisburg City, they will either travel to the Richmond Kickers on Tuesday, July the 6th at the University of Richmond Stadium in Richmond, Virginia, 7 p.m. Or the New York Red Bulls, or at DC United on Wednesday night, July 7th, 7:30 p.m. And once again, they'll be playing that home match at George Mason University's stadium in Fairfax, Virginia. We'll see what happens with that one. But if Harrisburg wins, they'll travel to either DC United or Richmond, Virginia. The other quarterfinal possibilities for the U.S. Open Cup, Charleston Battery, Chicago Fire winner, could travel to the Rochester Rhinos, or Columbus Crew could travel to Chicago Fire. Or the Charleston Battery could travel to Columbus. Austin Aztecs, Chivas USA winner, could travel to the Houston Dynamo. Or Miami FC could travel to Chivas USA July 6th or July 7th, depending on what the Galaxy does against AC St. Louis. Austin Aztecs could also travel to Miami FC. So that is still going on. And that is still going on, ladies and gentlemen. And the U.S. Open Cup, once again, going on with everything that is going on with U.S. soccer. I apologize. I'm trying to follow things that are going on in the game of soccer, the game of football. I apologize if I seem kind of distracted. I keep getting these texts, so I'm just trying to pick up whatever is going on, and hopefully these things will as we'll continue on with the show. But so anyway. Going back to what we're talking about, the New York Red Bulls, obviously Thierry Henry is coming over. He will be the top signing coming for this summer transfer window. And hopefully with Tony Chani and even Jeremy Hall, they could be one of the top players in the midfield that can probably solve this central midfield position. One sense of Mauro Guevara, and let's all hope that it will come to fruition, and let's all hope that it's just fine. Now, obviously, I don't think there's a problem with the Red Bulls right now. If there ever is maybe a bad losing streak, it'd just probably be confidence lacking. But, you know, you expect that to happen with a regular team, baseball, and the NFL, and basketball. It happens in football as well. There have been known for top sides to be in slumps. But anyway, hopefully this slump is not going to be that bad. But then again, there's really no slump at all. Let's just hope they don't get a second slump in the season. Now, speaking about the season, we're going to take a look right now for the Red Bulls. We're going to take a look and see what is going on in the standings in Major League Soccer as we take a look and see the full table as well as the conference tables going on. Obviously, in first place, Los Angeles Galaxy, 14 played, 10 wins, 3 losses, 10 wins, 1 loss with 3 draws, 33 points, goal differential of 18. Salt Lake, 13 matches played, 7 wins, 3 draws, 3 losses, 24 points total. Goal differential of 11. Columbus with 12 matches played, 24 points, of course, third of a differential of 7. Third, New York Red Bulls in fourth at the moment, 8 wins, 5 losses, no draws, 24 points total with a plus 1 differential. Colorado Rapids in fifth, 6 wins, 3 losses, 3 draws, 21 points, plus 4. FC Dallas in sixth, 4 wins, 6 draws, 2 losses, total of 18 points, the plus 3. San Jose in 7th, 18 points, 5 wins, 3 draws, 4 losses, with a plus 1. Also Toronto FC, 5 wins, 3 loss, 3 draws, I gotta stop that. 5 wins, 3 draws, 4 losses, with a total of 18 points, also a plus 1 differential. There in 9th. 12 matches played, 4 wins, 5 draws, 3 losses, with a total of 17 points, with a plus 1. Houston in 10th, 5 wins, 2 draws, 7 losses, total of 17 points, with a minus 1 differential. Seattle, 11th, 4 wins, 3 draws, 7 losses, 15 points, minus 5. Kansas City, 3 wins, 3 draws, 6 losses, 12 points, with a minus 5. New England with 3 wins, 2 draws, 8 losses, 11 points, minus 8. Chivas USA, 3 wins, 1 draw, 9 losses, 10 points, minus 6. Philadelphia Union wins, 1 draw, 7 losses, 10 points. And in dead last, DC United, 3 wins, a draw, 9 losses, 10 points, minus 14 differential, scoring 10, allowing 24 in 13 matches played. In the playoffs through the East right now, Columbus in first because they've played one match less with a plus 7. Red Bulls in second, plus 1, with both of them in 24 points. Toronto FC with 18 points, third. Chicago fourth with 17 points, fifth. New England sixth, Philadelphia seventh, last. In the West, of course, the Los Angeles Galaxy. First place, 33 points, not only leading the West, but also the top points getter for that CONCACAF Champions League seeded spot in the group stage. Real Salt Lake, second place. Colorado Rapids in third. FC Dallas in fourth. San Jose fifth. Houston sixth. Seattle seventh. And Chivas USA dead last in the West. So, and if this would continue to stay as is, you would probably see Los Angeles, Columbus, New York, Salt Lake, Colorado, and Toronto FC qualifying for the 2011 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup third round if these positions do remain. If they do remain. But we shall see. There are still plenty of matches remaining. The Red Bulls still have 17 matches to play, and we'll see what's going on. And don't forget, Superliga will be coming as well. We will definitely try to do Superliga when the matches are going to be played and what is going on. Now, I have to also go and say, going back with the Red Bulls currently, their under 23 side, which is of course playing in the North National Premier Soccer League. The National Premier Soccer League, they are doing very well in that league. And obviously that's their under 23 kids taking on decent amateur sides. And they are in a conference, the Northeast Atlantic Conference, with the Boston T-Men, the New York Athletic Club, the Brooklyn Italians, New Hampshire Mountaineers, Long Island Academy, and Morris County Colonials in New Jersey. So, how are they doing? You may ask, the under 23 New York Red Bulls? They're in first place. 25 points with 9 matches total, 8 wins, 1 draw, no losses, scored 28, gave up only 5, a differential of 23. And who is on this roster? Some players you know, some players you might not know, but to tell you right away, very simple, Johnny Xantis is on this club, so is Mr. Matt Castle. The two highly touted players that you were hearing about in the past. And, of course, the rest, John Tardy, Mario Rios, David Reed, Steve Amaya, Kadeem DeCres, Jay Fartura, Jack Freeman, Adriana Gabriel, Kevin Garcia, Nick Gendron, Mark Godelman, Kawami Holders, Sakri Hot, Connor Lade, Rob McLarney, Hayden Morris, Michael O'Keefe, Andrew Welker, Anthony Vasquez as well. First match for the under-23s in the NPSL, Red Bulls defeating the New York Athletic Club 1-0 on Saturday, May. Hard, defeating Long Island Academy on Wednesday, June 2nd, 2-0, defeating New Hampshire Mountaineers 3-0, June 5th. The only draw was against the Boston T-Men, a 1-1 draw on June 9th. Traveled to New Hampshire, defeated Mountaineers 3-1 on June 12th. June 13th, defeated the Boston T-Men 5-0. June 15th, defeating Long Island Academy 3-2. June 19th, defeating the New York Athletic Club 5-0. And then 5-1 Colonials on their schedule. And now going back home, this coming Thursday, July 1st, New York Red Bulls will be hosting the Brooklyn Italians at New Jersey Institute of Technology on July 1st. Wednesday, July 7th, they'll be hosting Morris County Colonials at NJIT. In their final match on the road, John Dewey High School, they take on the Brooklyn Italians. Brooklyn Italians again at 5 o'clock. playoffs, we'll let you know. But right now, the New York Red Bulls under 23 side with 9 matches played, 8 wins, 1 draw, 0 losses. And that will conclude so far here, even though it is the Red Bulls hour. We're going to give you half an hour right now. And I think it's enough at the moment because soon I will have to get ready for my travels to Harrisburg, taking on the City Islanders. And once again, you can see some video on YouTube as I'll post them there. And at the same time, they'll be also be posted at MajorLeagueSoccerTalk.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go back and talk about the World Cup. Goal line technology, ladies and gentlemen, what can we learn about goal line technology? What can we do when you try to avoid these? Is the replay available to FIFA? Is the technology ready? Is FIFA ready to have this technology? Will FIFA allow this technology to happen? You know, I have to say that sooner or later, controversy has to end in football. Every time there's a World Cup, there's always something controversial. If it's not the refereeing, it's the balls by Adidas, the Jabulani's. And I have to say that, you know, I still have to say that what's been going on in this World Cup, it has been absolutely terrible to see that certain things that are easily corrected are not being corrected. You can say that the referee from Mali, Koulibaly, should have allowed that goal to happen, but didn't because he thought he saw a foul. And obviously the foul on the USA, nowhere to be seen. It was obviously the Slovenians who are fouling our boys. But even so, the goal should have stopped. I have to say that seeing what happened with England, that their second goal did cross the entire line, and then not counting, should there be referees behind the goal, or as they say in hockey talk, in hockey terms, goal judges? I think if you want to eliminate the goal judges, if you want to eliminate the extra referees like they do have it at the in the Europa League, which I still think it's kind of stupid to see two extra assistants or two extra referees in the Europa League. Honestly, give the fourth official in league matches around the world, qualifying matches, Gold Cup matches, UEFA Cup matches, Asian Cup, Cup of Nations in Africa, the Oceania Cup tournament, the Copa Libertadores. You give the fourth official a little more power, and not only is he standing there to watch what's going on in the match, not only do you give that referee the extra power of what's going on in the match to become a fourth set of eyes and allow him to talk to the referee what happened so he can issue a card or not, you give him a monitor, flat screen TV, computer monitor, flat screen. Whoever is doing the match, either it's, you know, the FIFA themselves, ESPN. In England, it's I believe in France it's Canal. In Italy it's RAI. Scotland's probably also Sky Sports, whoever. You run your replays normally. The fourth official has a headset on with the microphone. The referee and or the assistant can say, go to the fourth official, contact him and say, listen, we need you to look at this because I'm not going to come all the way to see this for myself. You trust the fourth official. You trust him to make a decision. And with all the camera angles there are in the World Cup, in an MLS match, in a Premiership match, in a national team match, in a continental championship match, a club match, you can see if the ball did cross the goal line, the whole ball crossing the entire goal line. Within a matter of moments, you just say, you know what? It's a goal or it's not a goal. And then the referee will relay it back to on the headset and microphone to the main referee and to both assistants and say, view, it is a goal. Go ahead and restart the match. Or it's not a goal. I'm going to drop the ball. I'm going to drop the ball at this spot where it was either cleared or the team that thought they scored, if the goal does not count, has to do fair play by either throwing it back to the keeper or kicking it over the end line and allowing the keeper to restart the match. Stoppage time for this to happen. What do you do about stoppage time? It's very simple. Stoppage time will be added 1 minute. So that's what I would like to see. That is what I would like to hopefully see if they want to do something like that. Now, obviously, you can't stop the game all the time. You can't, you know, you can't keep on doing this all the time. But still, if this is a way, if this is a way to make everyone satisfied that goal line technology can work, then you know what? All I can say is this. All I can say is this, is that I think this would be a very good idea, a very good idea for FIFA to at least take a look at. You don't have to build a special box. You don't have to look at a special monitor for the main referee to see if it was a goal or not. You're all on the same page. You're all trusting each other. And then what you do is this. If the goal is scored, how do you signal it? Well, it's simple. The referee will point to the center circle and say, goal. If the referee gets confirmation that the ball crossed the goal line, the whole crossing the goal line does count, he'll blow his whistle and point to the spot to signal a goal. Pointing to the center circle to say it's a goal. If the ball does not cross the entire line, if it does not cross the entire line, then the referee will signal with his whistle and he will do a washout of no goal. I think that could be a better idea. I think that could be a solid idea. If FIFA wishes to do so, does FIFA wish to do so? That is the main question. That is the main thing that has to be asked. And honestly, I really don't know if they ever will. Would it be wonderful? Yes. Do I think it could happen? I really don't know. I really don't know. it would be interesting to see if replay can work in football. I think if you do it right and you do it within a minute, because the replays can, it doesn't take that long for the replay people to just edit a couple of camera angles and to make it into one quick package for replays across the line or not. So I think that would be a very good idea if it did happen. Will it happen? That's the main question. And I don't think, I don't really believe it's going to happen, because Sepp Blatter wants controversy. Sepp Blatter wants football to be, I wouldn't say not taken seriously. I just say, you know, talk more about what goes on in World Cups, like what really should have happened and what not should have happened. And that's the situation I see with this goal line technology. But we'll see what goes on, and we'll see what's going to happen. Going back to the World Cup, if we don't mind. Of course, the great Javier Aguirre, I think for the first time, outmanaged himself. And when I say he outmanaged himself, I mean I think he just went too loyal to his players from the past. He remained too loyal to those players that did him proud in past World Cups, meaning back in 2002. Obviously, you say to yourself, they should have group match. Unfortunately, they did not do that. And looking at their squad, how is it Guillermo Ochoa, who was basically plastered all over the United States and Mexico for Powerade, for Coke, for, you know, anything that is advertisable, how is it possible that Ochoa, who basically should have been the starter for the Mexican national team, gets benched for Oscar? Wasn't Ochoa the man who was supposed to be the one to do everything? I mean, what a Cuauhtemoc Blanco? Israel Castro? I mean, Guillermo Franco. I mean, you know, you look at these players, Luis Michel, Adolfo Bautista, born in 1975, Gerardo Torrado as well. I mean, you know, 1973. Well, it's nice to see Cuauhtemoc Blanco score that penalty kick over France to make it 2-0 for Mexico. I mean, they showed themselves to be nothing. They lose to Uruguay, which is what I expected. But when you draw 1-1 with South Africa, and even though they are the host country, and you let South Africa score first, I mean, you know, what is going on? Rafael Marquez as well. Ricardo Osorio. I mean, these are players that probably, I don't know. I think they're past it. Obviously, Mexico is going to have new blood, but here's the problem. You know, Aguirre has been known to be this coach who is technically sound and make solid selections. He went to the well one too many times with the old guard. He went to the well once too many times with them, and unfortunately, it bit him in the rear end. What is it for the future of Mexico? It's still bright. Mexico will always be one of the top two sides in CONCACAF along with the United States. It's always going to be that third team or that fourth team that is going to be the question mark. Javier Aguirre, unfortunately, I just think he shot himself in the foot. This was not a good World Cup for Mexico. And once again, yes, Carlos Tevez was offsides on the second attempt. First attempt, he was on. Second attempt, he was off. And they should not have allowed that goal. But honestly, Argentina does what Argentina does so well. Destroy their opponents with ease. And once again, you have to say, you know, I tip my hat. I'm eating crow. Diego Maradona has done something. Yes, he is a legend in Argentina. Yes, he is a fabulous player. He was a fabulous player back then. But one thing is for sure, Diego Maradona, he has done something with this Argentine national team. Obviously, a couple of players that are probably missing were not, you know, were his choice not to pick them. In four matches, you can't argue with it. You cannot argue with the mess. You cannot argue with how he has done the job for this national team. And the man who gave him this position, and the head of the Argentine Football Federation, you know, he's looking pretty good now, and obviously his job is not on the line anymore. Second round matches still to be played. Quarterfinal pairings have already started. We still have Paraguay versus Japan. That's tomorrow morning. And then tomorrow afternoon, Spain. Two matches will be in the quarterfinals. And so far, your quarterfinal matchups are simply Uruguay versus Ghana, and the Netherlands versus Brazil, and then, of course, Germany. We will find out what will happen after the U.S. Open Cup matches. Shocking how both how France and Italy are gone in the group stages as they did not qualify. New Zealand did not win. They did not lose, but they earned 3 points. They earned 3 points in three draws. What a day for New Zealand. And who knows? For maybe a win and two draws, we'll see what happens in the future. Ladies and gentlemen, I have to say, once again, this has been a decent World Cup. It hasn't been that great. It hasn't been that fantastic. And we will see what's going to happen in the future with goal line technology. get ready for the USA in 2011 Gold Cup Tournament of CONCACAF. And also, let's get ready for the next round of World Cup qualifying, starting with the draw at December of next year, and then the scheduling that goes from 2012 and 2013. Don't forget, South America will have their qualifying start in the middle of 2011. Coming back from World Cup duty for the Red Bulls, Andrew Boyens. Coming back from World Cup duty from the Los Angeles Galaxy, of course, Edson Buttle and Landon Donovan. And here's something that should smile to your faces for those of you that want to see our boys playing in the European leagues. Everton trying to bring back Landon Donovan permanently, and not just them. Manchester City has thrown their names into the hat as well for Landon Donovan. Will it be a summer transfer window signing, or will this be a winter transfer window signing for Landon Donovan going back? One thing is for sure. He has proven himself in this World Cup. He has scored 3 goals in this World Cup. The roof shot, the trailing, the play, and putting in the rebound, the equalizer on the spot. Landon Donovan is the future of our country and the future of the national team. Again, he'll probably have another World Cup in him, or 2, depending on his situation. And I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we are going a better side in the years to come in this next cycle. Who will be the head coach? Honestly, I do not know. But here are my choices. Beanhawker is my favorite. Second, Steve Nichol from the New England Revolution. He's Scottish, and yes, he does have a grasp of the players in Major League Soccer, the best talented players in the collegiate soccer whenever he goes to the draft. He always does a fabulous job. If you're looking for American coaches, Ziggy Schmid, Seattle Sounders. Or Dominic Kinnear, Houston Dynamo. And I did have a commenter from my Red Bulls report on Major League Soccer Talk against the Kansas City Wizards. Why not Hans Bakke? Now, let me say that I am not against Hans Bakke to be the head coach of the U.S. men's national team, because he's already had a 5-match stint with Mexico, being the assistant to Sven-Goran Eriksson. But right now, I think he needs a little more seasoning. I think he needs a little more time to get acclimated into Major League Soccer, because at the moment, 13 matches, in my opinion, is not enough for Hans Bakke to see who can be available for the men's national team in a World Cup. But at the same time, does he want to be the head coach of the U.S. men's national team? If it's just an MLS, then that avenue is closed. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Voice and Fire Soccer Podcast Show. I'd like to thank my guest, Jeff Reed, talking about PPL Park and the first victory for the Union at PPL Park. This Thursday, once again, Round 3 Recap Show, the U.S. Open Cup. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy your football. Thank you very much.